listening to The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
We're back. WB, you notice how once the truth comes out, he wants to hurry up and start the program, right? Let's go live. Now, we're talking about where the power is, the power behind the 1230 AM radio. Oh, man, we know who with the juice. Look, first of all, WB and RB, Warren Bell and Romulus Brown. Nobody does it better. News and sports. Happy Jazz Fest Day, everybody. The moment we've all been waiting for. We're going to get right into it. I cannot wait till we have reality radio. What better kooky or dysfunctional, functional?
Oh, it's fun being here.
Crazy place can you have? Can you see us on VH1? Mona Scott, Black Radio New Orleans style, right here at WB.
People will be cracking up laughing like I am.
Well, hey, man, first of all, it's one of our most popular segments that folk talk about. First of all, again, Jeff Thomas, in the world of trying to figure out what the role of the press and journalists is today, every day what you do with Think504.com, you make it clear in terms of accountability, sharing of information. And I want to ask you before we get into our segment, in terms of accountability and sharing information, you know, what is it that drives you in your quest to continuously want to educate the public?
That's a tough question, O.T. You should prepare me for these things. I have to think about that answer. And
I'm always motivated when I see you. God moves me in certain ways. But as I think about some of the tough questions and what we see today, man, out of journalists and media outlets, I could always pick up a subscribe to Think 504. If I'm trying to figure some stuff out, even if you have a slant or if you have a bias or if you have a point, the most important thing you try to do is give me the information so I can make my own decision. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. Listen, I try to look at the facts as they are. But my bias is toward uplifting the lives of African-American people and families, and particularly here in New Orleans. And I think, you know, that's what I'm going to talk about today. I think New Orleans should be a sanctuary city. It really should be.
For black folks.
For black folks. Exactly right. Let me tell you two things. I'm telling you two things I want people to take away from today.
Make it
sanctuary
think.
City and war. Right. War on poverty. If we do those two things in New Orleans, it'd be a great place.
Okay, well, we're going to get to that because that's going to be a real heavy conversation. We're also going to talk transition, mayor-elect, question marks, who's running it, a whole lot of things. But the Pelicans, man, are playing my Warriors, but I'm going to be with the Pelicans.
Really? Come on. I know the Warriors are your team. Now.
The Warriors are my team, but I'm going to be with the Pelicans. I love what Alvin Gentry has done. I like the awakening of Jrue Holiday.
Sure.
Man, I just like the fact that they have transformed into a really good team.
They are definitely a contender. They are definitely a team on the rise. They are definitely a team to be reckoned with. And certainly, I don't know that they are going to be able to beat the defending champion, Golden State Warriors, who have a starting 10. I mean, they go 10 deep. Right. The Pelicans, we bring off maybe two, three off the bench. But, you know, so I don't think we're as deep as they are. And the playoff experience that they have versus, you know, us being an upstart team, I think that's going to be the difference in this series. But I'm hopeful that AD and Jrue gain valuable experience and that propels them into greater things. I think AD is coming into his own. And if Jrue Holiday can sustain this play next season, they are going to be a team to be reckoned with.
I actually, like some folk think, look, they were playing better with Boogie, but when he got hurt, I think he has been a catalyst to the attitude. As a matter of fact, he has been one of the best things that ever happened to Anthony Davis. Their friendship,
absolutely,
the way he motivates. I remember that game when Anthony Davis got hurt at halftime, and Boogie went to him and said, "Hey, look, man, if you give me your Achilles,
I'll go back in the game. Yeah, that's right.
We need you to go back in
the
game."
That's right. He toughened him up without a doubt. He made him more professional. Right. He made him a winner. He made him a guy who wasn't afraid anymore. I just don't know I feel for Boogie. That Achilles injury is one that no big man has ever come back in the history of the league.
If he could come back from that, given the fact that he can play inside and out, and you know technology today.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when I tore my ligament years ago as a youngster, you know, they glued it together.
Yes, and right. Sort of, it's two stitches and come on.
It's some cement.
Right, right.
It's a different kind of technology now. They make you better for a little while now.
That's right. That's right. I'm hopeful that Boogie is going to be able to come back and contribute. But I have to say that the transformation of the team when he went down from being a through Boogie, they were a slower tempo. Mm-hmm. Boogie had to have the ball in his hands in most sets. Now they are fluid. They are moving the ball. I say that they are better now without Boogie. Maritech has been great. I'll say this. Dell Demps has done a phenomenal job. He certainly earned, a longer contract.
No doubt.
And Alvin Gentry certainly earned that new year he got, that extra year he just got. So I'm hopeful that, you know, they are going to be able to sustain this through the play of Jrue Holiday. Boogie comes and is able to be a contributor in some degree. I'm not sure what that's going to be. And the continued advancement in play of AD, the Pelicans are going to be a team to be reckoned with, buddy.
Well, we want you to tune in. We want you to weigh in. We're talking to Jeff Thomas, Mr. Think 5, the editor, CEO of Think504.com. You ought to be subscribing now. Over 250,000 subscribers. One of the most accurate and objective media outlets. It's one of my main sources to make sure that I'm reading Think504.com. His ability to go within the roots, his ability to get the backstory is something that doesn't happen with a lot of journalism today. The Saints, man. 504-260-9265. Carlos Wynn, but the Saints, I like the draft pick.
Now, let me tell you. I'm sitting there last night. I'm watching the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, a trade. Green Bay's trading with the Saints. I said, boy, they're going to get this quarterback. They're getting Lamar Jackson. I can't wait. Man, it's going to be great.
You're thinking like me. I was hoping we got Lamar. Could you see the Saints offense diversify, bring Lamar Jackson in for a couple plays?
Did he get drafted last night?
Yeah, the Titans.
Oh, wow. And they have Mariota.
No, the Ravens.
Oh, the Ravens.
Ravens.
That makes sense. All right. All right. And then they picked this guy, and I thought, who is this? I never heard of this guy. Some small school guy. Then I started thinking about the Saints.
He's a big guy at a small school.
He's a big guy. He plays for Frank Wilson, like you said earlier. You know,
Frank knows talent. Frank, one of the best talent evaluators in the country.
Prediction, he's going to be a major college coach real soon and be highly successful. But I'll say this. The guy has a lot of roots here in New Orleans. You know, his grandfather was the great Dr. Davenport with Suno Track.
Absolutely.
He was dominating in AIA.
Absolutely.
Willie Davenport, right. And when I looked at some of the footage on him, the guy was incredible. He was dominant. And then the Saints have a history.
We're going to correct that. Roe Brown.
Dr. Artis Davenport.
Okay. The Artis Davenport. Davenport.
That's right.
Okay.
All right. Roe was yelling at us, and he's right. But I started thinking about the Saints and their ability to go get those small school talents and turn them into. I mean, they
Marcus
know how
Coase.
To. Yeah, look, they know how. I mean, they had a lineman. I can't remember his name. I mean, they have a history of getting talent from small school. And I mean, Teron Armstead. I mean, yeah, there you go. I mean, people like that. And so I have confidence in this bunch. And if
I do,
let me just say
I
this:
I do too.
If the lightning striking twice is hard. Last year's draft class was lightning hitting the Saints. I mean, they had four players who contributed. That never happens, right?
Such all pro.
Right, right. But now, if they can get this first-round draft choice to be a contributor against with the defense now is dominant.
I can never get Roe Brown to ever be overzealous about anything. And when I asked him about the Saints this morning, he predicted potentially great team.
Yeah.
And usually, you know, Rose, this is business, right?
Right.
So he's
right.
like,
right.
he's like, they have a chance to be really, really, really good next
year. They didn't have many holes. And I think that, you know, given If Drew Brees stays healthy, this new talent on the defensive line, the defense is now dominant. I was the
Cam Jordan. Ooh, yeah, right. On one side, this kid Davenport on the other side.
Right. And plus, what's his name? Amin Mora, who was good last year. He got hurt. He hurt his Achilles.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they get some more pressure on the quarterback, that's the only thing in my mind that the defense was lacking last year, was pressure on the quarterback besides Cam.
Cam versus everybody
right,
else.
Right, exactly right. So now with a little help, this team could really be a Super Bowl contender.
Well, I agree. So it's a good time to be a Pelican and Saint. Good time to be a sports fan.
Sports fan, right.
I'm going to some baby cake games this spring, too.
Oh, you really?
Yeah, okay. I'm going to go take a little man out there, man.
Oh, yeah, that's great. That's great.
And,
that sounds
and enjoy
fun.
The game. Have you seen, and we were talking off air, and I actually mentioned it earlier this week or last week. I don't know that I've seen a better legislative performance out of a duo, J.P. Morrell and Joe Bowie.
Let me tell you.
Combined. Usually there's one legislature dealing with one issue.
Right.
We've been very critical of our legislator.
Right.
But Joe Bowie and J.P. Morrell are hearkening or reminding me of the days of Pepe Bruno and Sherman Copeland, John O'Leary during their heyday.
Right.
You're talking about a very aggressive, progressive.
Right.
I've not seen that type of legislative work done out of New Orleans legislature in a long time.
Right. Those two deserve A's, A pluses, stars. I mean,
I agree.
Let me tell you, you know, OT, because you follow this stuff, and like I do too. Getting legislation passed in the state legislature is tricky. All right. First of all, I've said this before, and I've said it on air, and I get myself in bed. You know, we don't have the smartest people in the legislature. We're 50th in the country in education, and so the people who are
not because they're not smart people, but collectively they're not producing a smart product.
Right.
Or we wouldn't be ranked where we are.
Right. The people who get elected here in the state of Louisiana are from that pool, from that talent pool. And so I think, though, so now, but you have – some really intelligent black men who are going up there and
really
standing up on the podium and beating down these foolish arguments about mass incarceration, about bestiality, about all of this foolishness with logic, with good common sense arguments, and defeating the ignorance that these northern and
Jim Crow laws about juries.
Exactly
how juries
right.
are selected.
Exactly right. Those kinds of things. I mean, J.P. Morrell, I think, has had a stellar performance.
Let me say this. And
needs to be congratulated.
The thing that I appreciate most about what Senator Morrell has done is that, and I do not like political leaders who, when they will stand by something wrong, and then they will allow that wrong move to continue to the detriment of the people. He got my respect when he said, you know what, we made a mistake on the Sewage and Water Board.
All right.
Let's give the people a chance to fix it. Let's put some council representation back, in spite of BGR and all these other organizations who've tried to control these entities politically because there's a lot of capital and a lot of money and opportunity to go through them. He said, no, we made a mistake last time.
Right.
Here's an attempt to fix it. I like that type of leadership, Jeff Thomas.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And that's the kind of common sense approach that, listen, you make a mistake, you own up to it, and let's correct it, and let's move forward. Let's do the right thing now, moving forward. And so that kind of ties into what you were talking about earlier with the mayor-elect's decision to choose Warren Riley. You got to make a decision. You go with it. You do what you think
is right.
If that's
what you
want to
do, do it.
Right, sure.
Just have an argument for it. Stand by it. Hope it works out. If it doesn't work out, go in another direction.
All right, but don't be beholden to different groups and organizations who have agendas that may not be in tune with what you're trying to do. So I'm hopeful that – I mean, I'm proud of the work that both Joe Bowie and J.P. Morrell
Joe Bowie has been consistent – and you know what? And he has not said, I told you so.
Mm-hmm.
All of the data in terms of education, all of the independent national organizations have said Joe Bowie was right 2 years ago. He was right 1 year ago.
Right.
And he's right now.
Right. It's going to be interesting to see how successful they are. I mean, moving this legislation from committees and getting it passed and signed by the governor is still an arduous task. It's an uphill battle, but I think JP's gotten a lot of his stuff across the goal line, and it's going to happen, and it's going to be signed.
Can you believe Jeff Thomas? And it's when I think about people like Ronald Reagan, many of the Bushes, Herbert Walker, and Donald Trump talking about let the states decide, right? And when you look at this trial by jury or jury decisions, right, dealing with Jim Crow, black code laws that are still on the books, if you let the states decide, if you don't have federal intervention, man, if you would just leave it up to the states, especially many of the southern states are still operating in Jim Crow times. Well, the Jim Crow laws are still on the books.
Well, not only that, OT, we have 70 or so laws on the books in the state of Louisiana that the U.S. Supreme Court has deemed unconstitutional. But they're still on our books. And
The states decide.
So, exactly right. So federal oversight has got to be supreme. And states, I certainly believe local rule is important.
Absolutely.
I'm talking about sanctuary cities.
We're going to get to that.
I can't wait to get to that. It's important that we are able to control our own destinies locally. But when we go beyond the pale, when we do things that are unconstitutional, when we do things that are so egregious, so far afield, that the federal government then has the right to say, no, you can't go that far, state. You can't go that far, local municipality.
Well, let me say this. Look, y'all don't want to miss this because Jeff Thomas's definition and view and dream of a sanctuary city is something totally different. It is unbelievable, but it's a powerful conversation we're going to have about what he deems and what should be a sanctuary city. You don't want to miss that, guys. Call your friends. Tell them to tune in. Put it on 1230am.com or 1230 in the radio. You don't want to miss this conversation about what Jeff Thomas says should be a sanctuary city. We'll be back after the break.
WBOK, real talk for real times. You're listening to The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
We're back. Welcome back to the Good Morning Show. Oliver O.T. Thomas, the early bird, and the entire WBOK listening audience. Back to the legislature, but this time, the legislature as a whole, right? Still a $650 million deficit. We've had three sessions at literally cost us over $1 million per session that still have not fixed the budget.
Right. It's a joke. It's a joke. This is ridiculous. And this is what I'm talking about. We don't have the smartest legislators in the room. And so the problem is, though, that they have to do things to appeal to their constituency. So these ultra right wing, we're not raising taxes, never going to raise taxes ever in the history of the state of Louisiana under my watch, guys, cannot go in there and do things objectively. I mean, they have to go in with that negative approach. And when you go in with that negative approach, you aren't able to fund things like education and health care in the state of Louisiana without raising taxes. It's just impossible. We just don't have enough income to do it.
But we just gave a Formosan Chemical Plant a $1.5 billion tax break.
Yes, we did. So, yes, we did.
And we just lost a company, a billion-dollar company, that got its roots in New Orleans that's moving its headquarters to Dallas.
Right.
How goofy...
Right.
Listen, this
is the most pro-business broke state in the history of the nation.
Hold on a second, Jeff Tom.
How
can you be pro-business and broke?
Because, I'll give you a good example. Because
you're a businessman.
Let me tell you. I'll give a good example. The thing we talked about last time when I was on was this Harrah's Casino thing. All right, Harrah's Casino is getting a free deal. They should be writing $500 million check. I mean, they should be writing a $500 million check for the license.
The most successful land-based casino in the world today.
They're getting it for free. And now, let me tell you, the casino business has changed. Gaming revenues are down. But where they make money now is through entertainment. They make money on shows and events and the hotel, those things. And you know what they're doing? They're saying to the state, we're going to continue to pay you on gaming revenue. But now what we want to do is we want to bring in more entertainment. We want to build an entertainment venue. We want to bring in another hotel. The things that they're making money on. So what our silly, stupid legislators are doing is letting them, A, continue to pay us based upon the declining revenue and not getting any money on the increase in rent, on the new revenue source. And additionally, they're giving them a new 30-year lease for nothing. They paid for it the last time. In today's dollars, it would be worth $500 million.
And they're requesting to build a new, put 200 more hotel rooms.
Exactly right. And so this is why, when I say we're the most pro-business, dumb, backwards, broke state, because we're giving Harrah's everything they want for nothing. And Harrah's is saying, listen, we're going to continue to pay you based on the gaming revenue. Well, the gaming revenue is declining.
What could have been done to keep Smoothie King? That seemed like that was a no-brainer to me.
They didn't want to be here. The bottom line is they didn't want to be here. Dallas didn't give them anything. Dallas gave them no concessions. Okay. They just wanted to leave. And to me, that talks to the talent pool that's here in the state of Louisiana. It's just my belief. I don't know. I haven't talked to what's his name, Mr. Yin, I think.
Kim,
that's right. I haven't spoken to him. I don't know what his reasoning is. But I know that he moved to Dallas without any concessions, with nothing. And he just packed. He's still leaving some 20% of his crew here, but he's gone. He's out of time. And, you know, probably he's – I know this about the man. What I do know, some sketchy details, is that he's a progressive guy. He wants to move his company in a big way. Right. And he's stuck here in this ultra-right-wing Metairie. And so that's what he gets. So see you. Out the door.
504-260-9265. Give us a call, man. We are having this conversation about all things 504. The editor, journalist, and operator of Think504.com is on with us. Landrew, transitioning. He had a big luncheon yesterday. I couldn't attend. I would have gone to it.
I didn't get an invitation.
He's on. I did get invited. He's on the way out. Right. Mayor-elect Cantrell transitioning in.
I didn't get another invitation.
Wait.
I used to get invitations
No. You have not been invited to the inauguration?
I have not.
That doesn't make sense.
Well, let me tell you. You know,
has been invited.
Maybe I get my media pass. I don't know. I have to check on that. But, you know, I was with, you know, Think 504, supported Troy Henry in the primary, and then we were not with her in the runoff. And so, you know, I guess maybe that's why. And you know, the fact is, I'm hopeful, though, you know, maybe it's in the mail. Maybe the invitation's in the mail, and we'll see what happens.
Well, so before we continue to get into transition and the mayor-elect, we're going to go to the lines right now.
Okay.
Line one, Eric, you're on with Mr. Think504.com, OT and Early Bird.
Hey, God bless you. Yeah, I agree. I think we have to have the dumbest state legislators in the United States. I mean, it's beyond just putting out a bad product. These people are just really low IQ people.
Yeah.
And it's not by accident that you produce an insufficient or inferior product. You know, that inferior products come from a mindset. And I think, again, these people are some of the stupidest people that you could possibly have.
Right.
And it's amazing that people are even existing in this state. Or succeeding.
But it's interesting to me, though, that especially when you're in politics, you have your advisors, then you can operate as a body. It's hard for me to understand some of the things that I'm making. And I think Jeff said what you said, Eric, that if our legislature as a body was a lot more progressive and if there was more intellectual capital, then why are we from 46 to 50? Eric, so I think your analogy basically says, the facts don't lie.
Facts don't lie. Listen, low IQ equals racism, and let me tell you, racism equals bad policy, and bad policy is what we have. I mean, we have racist regressive policy. Right. We have a racist regressive tax base in the state of Louisiana.
And Jim Crow laws that still control the criminal justice system.
Exactly right. So, and the fact is that, you know, putting people in jail costs more money than we can afford. And what we're continuing to do, put people in jail. I mean, we had this little 10% reduction, but now that's it.
Thank you, Eric. You're right, brother.
I appreciate your call.
God bless you, man. Eric, have a great weekend. Line two, Kev Gentile, talk to me. You're on with Jeff Thomas, Think 504.
As always, OT, thank you for your service to this struggle here, and of course with the guests as well.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that, I mean, he kind of stole my thunder right before I came on. He was talking about cause and effect. We talk about the politicians. We talk about the causes of the effect that we're getting deficient services, but we never talk about why. And he just addressed it really with racism, quite frankly. But the thing is, the next question, the next logical conclusion is this. What are we going to do in the face of that reality to counteract that reality?
Great question.
We never, and we keep blaming the people who don't have the wherewithal to do it, and we leave the people who will be the only logical people to look at off the hook.
Well, Kev, you're right.
Black professionals.
Well, Kev,
I think Jeff Thomas has the answer in Sanctuary City.
We need a Sanctuary City. That's right. And I will say that's why we talked about the great job that J.P. Morrell has done and the great job that Joe Bowie are doing. Both of those guys. Let me tell you, you can't beat this elephant in one bite. It's going to take one bite at a time. And they're putting forth legislation and laws that are going to change this. Now it's going to take a long time. But what we can do, what we can control things is in the city of New Orleans.
Right.
And that's why New Orleans has to be the sanctuary city. Because in the state of Louisiana, we are surrounded by bigotry, ignorance, and foolishness. So where we can be great as African Americans is in the city of New Orleans. And that's why I'm saying it has to be a sanctuary from the state of Louisiana. And you're right. You're right, Kevin. We're going to talk about that in just a bit.
Kev, thank you, man.
We've got to hold the public to task. That's our job. To tell the leaders what we're willing to do, and the leaders are going to give us the resources so that we can perform our duty.
Absolutely. Hey, Kev, I think your response is there. Yeah. What is the response? And we need to begin to talk about that and deal with that. As always, though, Kev, appreciate what you do, man. Thank you in helping us put this puzzle together. Yeah, I love you. I knew where you were going to head because I'm starting to learn how Think 504 thinks. 504-260-9265. You want to be involved in this discussion. A sanctuary city, your model of a sanctuary city is different from Donald Trump's.
Yeah, we're not
different
talking
from Mitchell Andrews. Different from Barack Obama.
Yeah, listen, for the African American experience in Louisiana, in the country, has been attack. We have been under siege from day one. And so what we can do to make life better for ourselves is in cities like New Orleans, we can have rules and regulations and legislation that uplift the lives of African-American people. So let me tell you, you talked earlier about Mitchell Andrew, and I hear he's coming on Monday, and great. But I label his administration as an abysmal failure, Mm-hmm. I mean, the problem is poverty. And what he has done, the rules and regulations and policies that he's enacted have done nothing to influence poverty in a positive way. Poverty is worse now. I mean, these traffic cameras, for example.
Even in spite of his effort to rebrand the city post-Nagin, post-Katrina.
He's great at marketing. He's great at marketing NOLA for life and all of these great slogans, He's a slogan master. But from a distance, he looks great. But when you get up close and personal, the proof's in the pudding. The devil's in the details.
Fortune just named him one of the 50th greatest mayors of our time.
Who did?
Fortune.
They're looking at it from a distance. So when you look at it from far away, he looks good. But when you're right here in the midst of it, you understand the effects and cause and effects of the policies. I've been harping forever on these crime cameras. Traffic cameras. Traffic cameras cause crime. And let me tell you, people say that's a leap. Well, let me tell you what happens. Here's the deal. You get these traffic cameras, and now you got 50 tickets or 10 tickets or 5 tickets. Now you got these tickets. First thing is, if you don't pay these tickets, they go and get your credit bureau. So now your credit's slipping. So now you can't buy a house because your credit's not perfect, thanks to the city of New Orleans. And so we got blight problems. We need home ownership. Black people who own homes commit less crime at a clip of 85% less. But now the city is enacting policies that are preventing people from owning their own homes because they're messing up their credit files. Right, but wait, it gets worse than that. It's more sinister. These traffic cameras, what happens is you get enough tickets. You get 2 tickets now. And they can boot your car. And now they're writing tickets.
I think Senator Morrell put a hold on that.
Thank goodness for that. Thank goodness. J.P. Morrell has been great. But we're talking about what's happened under the 8 years of the Landry administration.
Right.
And during his tenure, so these traffic cameras, now you're a guy struggling to get to work every day. You got a car. You're paying your minimum insurance. You're going to work. Now you come out from work, and your car is booted. And now
can't go to work.
You can't go to work. So then what happens? You don't go to work.
You lose your job.
And then what happens? Then all of a sudden,
you can't pay your taxes.
You can't pay those fines. No, those fines and fees escalate because the longer you take to pay them,
the actual fines and the fees on top of the initial fine are greater than the initial fine.
Exactly right. And so now you are unemployed. You still got, let's say, you're a black man in New Orleans. There's some possibility that you might have some child support payments. And now all of a sudden,
you got to go back to prison.
You go to prison because if you're behind on your child support, then what happens? They put you in jail. So then now you have no money. You got pressures of rent. You got pressures of light bill. You got pressures of miles to feed. We just want to have families. And so what we need is we need relief from these attacks on us. I mean, the government has been attacking us. And we talked about the Justice Department talked about Ferguson and the history of fines and fees. It's worse here in New Orleans. These fines and fees are attacking us. And instead of fining and feeing the citizens, we need to be uplifting people. And now here's the biggest drain on the city of New Orleans. I'm sorry, go ahead. You want to say
something? No, go ahead. The biggest drain.
The biggest drain on the city budget in the city of New Orleans is NOPD. All right? NOPD. Now, first of all, I want to get into a whole discussion about do we need all of these. What time do I get off? 9 o'clock?
No, we finished at 9:30.
We're about to go to break. Oh, okay, because I was getting...
I still want to get into the weeds of the sanctuary city, too.
Yeah, all right, so I'm sorry.
We got you on the traffic cameras.
Right. So NOPD is the biggest drain in the city budget, all right?
Two-thirds public safety, two-thirds city budget.
So
3% families.
Here's the thing. If we, there's an article, the lead article, why punishment doesn't reduce crime. Mm-hmm. The fact is putting people in jail doesn't reduce crime. It causes more crime in the long run. When you put people in jail for minor offenses, it creates more crime. But let's talk about the fact is that we're spending all of this money on putting people in jail. Now part of the problem with the NOPD is this. It's totally mismanaged. It's been mismanaged since Pennington. Mm-hmm. Why the NOPD officers didn't like Pennington was because he got people from behind desks and put them on the street. Mm-hmm. Right? So right now, let's talk about the size of the NOPD. The International Chiefs of Police, and there's a whole bunch of scholarly approaches mm-hmm. that talk about how many police officers do you need per capita? What's the right size, right? Because we're talking about we need to hire more police. We need 25,000 police officers in the city of North. But the fact is the International Chiefs of Police, based on our population, 2.5 to 3 people, police officers per 1,000 people. That would mean around 1,100 officers. So we need we have 1,100 officers right now.
Right.
There's another rule that's generally agreed upon, and that's the 60-40 rule. Mm-hmm. 60% of the officers need to be on the street. You know what we got in New Orleans? We got 70% of our officers behind desks. 70% of our officers are behind desks. They're not on the street. So the problem with the NOPD is not the number of police officers. The problem with the NOPD is the structure of the department. The fact is, you know, we have this culture of laziness. I'm sorry to say to some of my friends who are sitting behind desks right now in NOPD, and I know you're listening. I'm sorry. I won't name your name. But I'll say that we have a bunch of guys and women who what they want to do is get a job in the upper ranks where they're making $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 a year, but they're behind desks doing what, in my opinion, is civilian jobs. Now, they argue you down that this is police work, that civilians can't do it. But the fact is, in most departments, civilians are doing those jobs. What we need is a reorganization of NOPD. And if we reorganize NOPD, then we don't need more officers. We just need to deploy the officers mm-hmm. that we have, put them on the streets. Right now, we have about 300 officers that are patrolling the streets.
Yeah.
300 officers. Mm-hmm. So that means we got 700 more who are sitting behind desks. I mean, this is a fact. This is not Jeff Thomas, you know, just saying things.
Right. Commissioned officers.
And so the problem is that and we're spending all of this money putting people behind desks.
Deployment, management, allocation of resources.
Exactly right. So I'll say this. I'll say that we have a violent crime problem, mm-hmm. but the NOPD is not going to solve the violent crime problem. So why do we need it? Part of my sanctuary cities situation or recommendation is that we defund NOPD. We put an immediate hiring freeze mm-hmm. at Inopita. Do not hire another officer. Mm-hmm. Don't stop this money. You're spending millions of dollars recruiting out of the state, by the way, when we got black men here in the city of New Orleans who need jobs. So we need to hire black men. Listen, if they have a minor misdemeanor, then they should be allowed to work for the NOPD. Because you know what? We've had over-policing by white cops often who don't even live in the city, who have an axe to grind, who don't care about the lives of these young black men that they're policing.
Let me say the other thing that I like about your contention of making a sanctuary city. You're saying a safe place for black folk to grow and prosper in a
exactly
city that's
right.
predominantly African American. And the other thing I love that you said, Jeff Thomas, was that you know that if the city is a sanctuary city for black folk, you know that it is a sanctuary city, a perfect place for everybody else.
Let me tell you exactly right. So if black people are growing and prospering and
you know everybody else is doing
everybody
well.
Else is going to do great. So, but the problem is, as long as we have this approach to attack the black community, then it's going to be a violent place for everybody. So we want New Orleans to be a great place to live, a safe place to live, then we need to stop attacking black men. We need to stop uplifting the lives of black men in this city. And the way we do it is through a sanctuary city. Are you hearing music now?
All right. And we're going to talk about how the incoming administration, Mayor Lee Cantrell, what she can do to make it a sanctuary city for African-American people.
Right, right.
The war on poverty.
Right.
And how we have public policies that impact
exactly.
poverty. We'll be back with Jeff Thomas after the break. A very powerful, prominent discussion on things that matter. I like that. So changing the whole definition of what a sanctuary city is,
yeah.
especially in majority African-American communities.
Yeah. We need to uplift the lives of black people.
A powerful thought process, Jeff Thomas. We'll be back after the break.
You're listening to WBOK, New Orleans.
You're listening to The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
We're back. Welcome back to The Good Morning Show. Oliver O.T. Thomas, the early bird, in the studio with, one of our more popular segments, someone who makes us think, not only makes us think, but also makes us act in terms of how do we deal with business, how do we deal with public policy, how do we look at our social and our activist community in terms of engaging on behalf of black folk and citizens in this town? None other than Mr. Think 504 himself, Jeff Thomas. Jeff, I love, man, the picture that you painted for what a sanctuary city is, especially in a historical African-American city,
right.
majority black population.
I just want to put a ribbon on it. And let me just,
yeah.
I don't mean to cut you off.
No,
I
please.
Just want to say this one thing, is that we don't need police state. We need uplifting state. We need to invest money rather than invest money in police.
Yeah.
We need to invest money in jobs, in a war on poverty. I'm sorry.
And I just want you to continue to paint this picture, though, because I like the concept, right?
Mm-hmm.
A place where African Americans thrive,
right?
Where they do business, where
right.
they're safe, where the
right.
schools are good.
Right.
Explain to our listening audience what you mean when you say sanctuary city. It's not the exclusion of everybody else, but it's that in so many urban corridors, you know, it is not a sanctuary for people of color.
I have a contention.
Go ahead.
I have a belief that part of the biggest problem in America is this attack on the black male. The attack on the black male creates poverty, creates violence, creates an unsafe environment for
mm-hmm.
everybody,
mm-hmm.
white people, black people, Asian people, everybody. Now, part of the issue is the structure of capitalism, mm-hmm. having have and have nots. But even our have nots can have, if we uplift their boat,
right.
then
a rising tide,
then all of us are doing better. And when I'm saying sanctuary city, I'm saying a place where African Americans have equal opportunity and access to capital. We don't have that here in New Orleans and across the country. Now, how does that happen? That happens through government intervention. Mm-hmm. That happens through government contracts.
Leadership.
We shouldn't be talking about, let me tell you, you look at Richards and Metro. Mm-hmm. I remember when that was a huge debate, when they were talking about, man, garbage isn't going to be collected properly. You're going to have issues. I mean, they were, you know, the immediate attack on black businesses not
those
having.
Those companies have thrived. They set the example.
Those companies are doing great.
Great. That's it.
I mean, the garbage has never been collected better in the history of the city of New Orleans. Two black men, black-owned companies doing a great job. And so the fact is, when we have an opportunity to perform, we do great. When I think, for example, we can talk about this first-round draft choice that the Saints had. Now, he's been at a small school. We don't know if he's going to be able to transition to the big stage. There are big questions about it.
Right.
I bet with the proper coaching, with the proper environment, with the proper support, this guy's going to be all pro just like Cam Jordan.
Right.
And so I'm saying that the same thing can happen with the proper support, the proper coaching, the proper mechanism uplifting us. African-American men in this city will be able to transition from an underclass to a class of people doing great. Was it you yesterday I heard talking about somebody was driving through and it was in Atlanta and how many white people live in this community?
Yeah,
and that's the wrong question.
I went to visit the late Terrence DuVernay.
Yeah, right. I remember that.
And the neighborhood was so spectacular. I asked him how many black folk live here? And he said, well, that's the wrong question.
Right. The question is how many white folk live here. And exactly. And so I think that is the New Orleans that we need.
I understand. I understand the concept.
That's the
sanctuary.
That would
be a great sanctuary.
And let me tell you, this is not Fantasy Island I'm on.
It can happen.
This is the reality of where we are in the city of New Orleans. We have, what is the city budget?
Over $700
million.
$700
million.
Capital program, yeah.
Right. And what is the sewage and water board budget?
With the FEMA investment, a couple of billion dollars right now.
Is the Orleans Parish School Board budget?
About $500 million.
If we get just.
That's a lot of money.
30% of each of those.
Mm-hmm.
And invest that in the black
community. You create a whole new class.
Let me tell you, Richard's Disposal and Metro Disposal are two examples of what black companies can do.
Now, Jeff Thomas, the other thing you said, that in Sanctuary City, though, you wouldn't just have two of your wealthiest people would not just be relying on government contracts.
Well, that's correct. That's
in a sanctuary city where it's a sanctuary for people of color, for black folk, the natural business climate, economic climate, would have created millionaires out of the social class in a truly sanctuary city.
Listen, businesses have to do business with other businesses. And so the fact is that black businesses are going to do business with other black businesses here in the city of New Orleans. And that, you know, listen, some white people are listening right now and are shaking in their boots. They're thinking that we're the ones doing business in the city of New Orleans, and we're the ones. And that's part of the problem. But let me tell you, there are a lot of things that will go into this sanctuary city. But I'll say this. It has to be two things I want to leave with. I've stressed the sanctuary city.
Yes.
The other thing I want to stress is a war on poverty.
Yes.
The two things that have to happen in New Orleans. The reason that we have the problems that we have is poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Poverty creates this crime. Poverty creates this negative thinking. Poverty creates this malaise within our community.
Whether it's West Virginia or whether it's the urban community.
Exactly right. The fact is that people's response to poverty is often the guy who went on this crime spree the other day came from an impoverished background. You look at his background, it's horrible. Now, I'm not saying, listen, everybody who's poor doesn't commit crime. But that doesn't mean that that poverty is not impacting the lives of everybody in this city. We need a war on poverty. Until we change our position, until we change our perspective, until we change the way we look at poverty and poor people, right now we have a negative viewpoint of poor people. Poor people are poor because they do poor things. They make poor decisions. They make poor choices. They do things that caused them to be poor. That's a lie. That's not the truth. That's part of the narrative bias in this country. And it's hard to overcome that.
Part of linguistic racism and implicit bias.
Exactly right. It's part of linguistic racism and implicit bias. And it's part of the belief that poor black people are poor because they're black and deserve to be that way.
And you're saying that this, if nothing else, through her efforts of her sanctuary city for people of color, for black folk, for economic equity, for public safety, for education, you're saying that the mayor-elect, the current in the transition, she will have an opportunity, she should have an impact to do that.
Well, not she should, instead of spending two-thirds of the city budget on NOPD, she needs to spend two-thirds of the city budget. We need a hiring freeze. First of all, we need a hiring freeze. We need to freeze the NOPD budget. And putting people in jail...
That hasn't worked.
It does not work. It does not work. The proof's in the pudding. Louisiana puts more people in jail. You know, we've said this 1,000 times.
Right.
Than anybody else per capita. We got still got the worst crime in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact is, we know that doesn't work. We do know that when you invest in people, when you invest in jobs and jobs training and life skills training, mm-hmm. when you invest in uplifting the lives of people, then all of a sudden, people's lives are transitioned. People's lives... The city will transition from a crime-ridden, and that's not really a fact, but we won't have nearly the kind of crime that we have. We won't have nearly the mm-hmm. kind of murders that we have, because people won't have to be on the corner slinging drugs. They'll be in their office slinging computer algorithms
right,
and that kind of
right.
stuff. And so black people are capable, qualified, and able to do it. All we need is access to the opportunities. And we've been denied access. We need a war on poverty, like we had a war on drugs where we put black people in jail at the highest rate in mass incarceration. We need to have a war on poverty where we put people in jobs at the highest rate, and all of a sudden, all of us will be doing better.
Two more subjects, Jeff Thomas, one that you've touched on, is that how do we tap in to the resources of the tourism industry right now that are enriching the convention center?
Mm-hmm.
And how do we take those funds? You're talking about over $250 million in growing. How do we begin to reinvest that money back into the sanctuary city?
Right. Well, listen.
Our tourism culture is booming to the point where the projections up to 2025, 26 right now, some of the biggest projections in the world.
Right. Listen, the convention center is sitting on our money. This is tax dollars pulled from the citizens of the city of New Orleans. Us poor people, funding, have put in almost $500 million sitting in the bank, sitting there, cash money.
Yes.
That they're doing nothing with. Now, I see they're running some ads on WBOK, and I'm glad to hear that. But what we need is a real program. And I have
a plan.
One that, I have a plan for them. It's called the BHOP program.
Part of a sanctuary city.
Part of a sanctuary city. And listen, in a sanctuary city, black people own houses. Because black people are people who own houses. 85% of them don't commit crimes. 85% of the people who commit crime do not own homes.
Right.
So how do we put people into home ownership? Well, they need real jobs and real jobs training. Well, how do they get this real jobs and what can they do? Well, we got black men who have a high unemployment rate, anywhere from 30 to 45%. Well, what can they do? We can teach them how to fix houses. And how can they, what can they do?
Infrastructure.
We got all of this blight. We got all this infrastructure needs in the city. If we teach them how to fix houses in the city, so we train some to be carpenters, we train some to be electricians, some to be plumbers, some to be drywall people, some to be painters. All of a sudden, we got crews of people who can renovate these properties. And then they work every day, right, in this program. So they have a job. And so now they are able to own the blighted property that they repair. Okay, so now we get blight coming off the books. And so now we're creating more tax dollars. And now we're creating people who are paying mortgages. Now, the mortgages, I say we fund the city of New Orleans through this program that I'm talking about, funds these mortgages. So every time the 1,000 people that have a job pay their mortgage every month, that money comes back into this pool. And then we are creating more job
opportunities.
Expanding the economic pie. And so now we have people who are tradesmen who become, now everybody's, let me tell you, my bias here is that every black man is going to be able to be a carpenter. Every black man is not good with his hands. So some of them need to learn how to be accountants. And some of them need to learn how to be mortgage brokers. And some of them need to learn how to do all of the things that go into home ownership. But the thing is this, if we create home ownership opportunities for black people, then crime goes down. 85% of the people who commit crimes don't own their houses.
Jeff Thomas, is a new discussion, and we've touched on this discussion before,
mm-hmm.
is a new discussion for the 21st century when you talk about black folk versus the rest of the world, does it have to be less about race and more about economic equity and parity?
Well, absolutely. Well, listen, no, it has to be about race. Let me tell you why it has to be about race. Because in America, poor black people.
Race means economic inequity.
Exactly right. Being black means those things. So now there are also some white people who suffer from that.
Absolutely.
In West, but they are isolated pockets of them.
Right.
And they are isolated because they were in industries that have died. You know, the coal industry, that kind of stuff. Those kinds of examples. But you across the board, across America, where there are black people, there's poverty, and that's
interesting though, because I was so sick of tired of the racial discussion so much, but from a historical perspective, you're saying that any talk about education, any talk about housing, any talk about economic opportunity, if it is not tempered with a discussion about race, then there's no real discussion.
Exactly right. Listen, white privilege means we don't want to be uncomfortable talking about race. White privilege means we are oblivious to this. White privilege means that these are things that we don't bring this to us because it makes us uncomfortable. We're going to flee. The fact is, you know, until we are able to get some conscious white people in the room, and there are many of them who are in the room and who are willing to help wake up.
Jeff Thomas, I'm going to do something I do on with a lot of our guests. I'm going to give you an opportunity. You're sitting in the room with Governor John Bel Edwards.
Oh, my goodness.
And soon-to-be Mayor LaToya Cantrell.
I think they'll have a case between us, but go ahead.
Okay, that's okay. but you have a chance to make them think.
Yes.
What are two or three things you tell each of them?
Well, wow. First of all, for LaToya Cantrell, this is something I wanted to mention a long time ago. I think Sewage and Water Board, everybody's bill needs to be cut to zero. When they had their computer.
Amnesty?
Zero.
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 Not amnesty,
zero. Let me tell you why. They don't know what people owe. They don't have a clue. They don't really know what people's water bills are.
That's a fact.
People thousands and thousands and thousands of people have been overcharged, and they don't have a clue. When they did a computed migration, they screwed up the bills.
That's a fact.
And so what they need to do now is they have people with huge backlogs in their bills. Mm-hmm. What they need to do is say on LaToya Cantrell's first day, I take the oath of being mayor, and everybody's water bill is zero. That's the first thing she ought to do, number one. John Bel Edwards, and let me tell you, that may seem like a small thing, but for poor people, regressive taxing and regressive bills, this is a big thing. And so for John Bel Edwards, I say he needs to continue the releasing people from jail. The problem is, the biggest problem
there's
right
pushback
now,
even to the reform.
Right. Right, exactly right, because there were a couple of people. Louisiana did that all wrong. Let me tell you, letting people out of jail, nonviolent offenders out of jail, was the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. Texas and everybody else did it. But the difference is, let me just say this.
Go ahead. The difference,
the one thing that they didn't do was they didn't have support. They just said, see you, go out of jail. In Texas, not only did they let them out of jail, they put them immediately into classes. They put them immediately into life skills and jobs training classes. They had support for them. Louisiana just said, go ahead, see you. Good luck.
How can Texas be so much more conservative yet so much more progressive than us?
Well, part of they are a richer state because there's so many more people there. And the tax dollars.
The corporate structure.
The corporate structure. They have more money. And we... And they if they had a Harrah's Casino, they would have made Harrah's Casino pay $500 million for that license. In Louisiana, we're giving them a free license for the next 30 years. That's it. We're the most pro-business broke state because we're not smart enough. They're smarter than we are.
Right.
They have smarter people in Texas. Texas is in the teens in education. Louisiana is 49th or 50th. They're smarter than we are. That's the fact.
But don't, because we're poorer, because we don't have as much, don't we have to be more careful how we deal with these corporate entities?
If we were smart enough to understand that, then we would. The problem is that, you know, when you're ignorant, you're ignorant. You don't know you don't even know what you don't know.
Jeff Thomas, making us
think,
making us think. Look, the consequences to elections, the last election meant we'll have more elections.
Yes, sir.
Dale Atkins was successful in her bid for Court of Appeals.
Congratulations
and,
to her.
And Ellen Hazua was successful in her bid to finally be
a judge.
So
congratulations to her.
Clerk of Civil Court and First City Court are now open. Who are some of the contenders?
Well, let's just say, we'll start with Ellen Seat, clerk of Small Claims Court. Tim Ray is now the interim. I think if he hasn't been named, he will be named shortly, the interim clerk. And I've spoken to Tim, and he said he's running for the job.
Oh, excellent candidate.
He had a great showing in the District B race.
Excellent
he came
candidate.
In third. He ran a strong third. And
he, matter of fact, it was written about him as one of the more outstanding people to offer themselves for office. Tim Ray, outstanding.
Young attorney, smart guy, intelligent, has worked on lots of people's campaigns, understands politics, understands the lay of the land in the city of New Orleans, and I think he'll do a fine job as the interim.
Great choice.
And I think that he is going to be the leading contender to win that
seat. A lot of people are calling him one of the faces of the future for political, for kind of thought leadership, smart, thoughtful, and engaged in the grassroots.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so, I haven't heard about other contenders for that seat.
Okay.
But let me just say, in the city of New Orleans, that the five best seats are, five best power positions are mayor, city council at large, sheriff, assessor, clerk of civil district
court. Civil court.
That's the fifth most powerful seat in the city of New Orleans. And it's open now.
Right.
It is Dale Atkins held that seat for 30 years.
So who's vying for that spot?
Well, now, the names are out there. So first of all, interim, her longtime lieutenant, Chelsea Napoleon, is now the interim clerk of court.
Okay.
I understand that she won. I haven't spoken to her about this, but I understand that she is interested in running.
I don't know her.
Let me tell you, I've worked with her. Spoken to her on the phone several times. I don't think I've met her, although I looked at a picture of her, and I think I know her from Xavier University, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
But I'll say that on the phone, she has been polite and but firm and, and at the same time authoritative, and so she seems like she's going to be
good. So who else?
So, but also, I'm hearing the first and most prominent name was current District D City Councilman Jared Brossette is interested in that job.
Okay.
And interesting for him, you know, when this last election cycle, we were looking at people who were going to try to run for
at large,
he chose not to run because the polling.
He wasn't polling very well.
He didn't poll well at all. So he stayed in this district where he did poll well, and he was able to easily recapture that seat. And so I think though.
Any other names?
Yeah, other names would be Nadine Ramsey.
Okay.
Who people.
Former judge, former councilman.
Former judge, former council person, who is talking. And then oddly enough, also Richard Perk, who ran for District B.
Right.
Against Tim Ray. His name's come up.
Richard Perk. No. Perk ran against Ellen Hazur for the civil court seat.
That's right.
Bloom ran for District
B. I'm sorry. I got it wrong. Seth Bloom is talking about running for the
clerk.
Clerk job.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. I don't know how I got Richard Perk's name in it.
Well, that's why we're here together.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, Seth Bloom is talking about running for that job. So that's going to be interesting to see what shakes out of it. That is a powerful position. I mean, that is one of the best jobs in the city of New Orleans. You get over 200 jobs, the people that work for you. You control the goings and comings in civil district court.
The lawyers are beholding.
The lawyers love you. They have to be your friend.
Yeah.
And so, absolutely. That's why Dale, once she was in office, was able to keep that job.
She leveraged it.
But I got to tell you, that job, that office is in need, in my opinion, of some modernization. At the last couple of years, Dale was doing that kind of stuff, but I think a heavy emphasis on modernization. You need to be able to go in there and do everything online. I don't think you should have to go to court to file papers. You should be able to do it online in 2018. And I'm hopeful that whoever gets this job modernizes the office to the fullest extent possible.
Jeff Thomas, we coming
out
to
time?
Coming to
time?
the end of this segment. Any more talk in terms of transition, your expectations? What do you hope to see out of the new administration? And any thoughts on the last one?
Well, I'll say that on the heels, I'm hopeful that the new mayor-elect is going to do a great job. I think it's critical.
It's important to all of us.
Yeah, I think that she needs to pivot away from the policies of the last administration, which was regressive.
Mm-hmm.
It was heavy on fines and fees. It was balance the budget on the backs of the poor. It was get as much money, as much millage as possible. So now that that's happened, I think we need to have a deployment of resources differently. We need to transition from this punishment attack on the black male to an uplifting of the lives of black people in this city. And if we are able to do that and make New Orleans a sanctuary city through a war on poverty, if we're able to do those two things, then I think New Orleans is going to be the greatest place for every American to live.
Jeff Thomas, he makes us think, who else would change the whole narrative and whole definition of what a sanctuary
That's right.
city is? Think about this. A sanctuary city is a place where people are safe, a place where black folk have community schools that work,
right.
a place where black folk, businessmen and women, not only can do business with government, but they can do business in the private sector. In a sanctuary city, a place where black men and women can walk down the street without fear of police brutality or harassment. And in Jeff Thomas's vision of a sanctuary city, black families and black communities feel the benefits just like everybody else. And last but not least, in a sanctuary city where black folk are doing well, he assures us that everybody else is too.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you did. Thank
That's
you.
Jeff
you said
Thomas.
It better than I did. Thank you, O.T.
We'll
I love you, brother.
We'll be back with President Guy McGinnis after the break.